All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And welcome to Veterans Radio. I am Jim Fossone. Glad to be your host today on Veterans Radio at 1600 WHAM. We hope you are having a great afternoon, and we're encouraging you to call in to talk to our benefits guests here. We have Michael Smith, who's the Washtenaw County Veterans Affairs Director. Michael, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Jim, always good to be in the studio with you and our other distinguished guest. And we're missing Dale today, but hopefully he's enjoying some well-deserved time off.
Well, Dale got a month of R&R here, and he wanted to make sure he got the whole month in. And we have with us Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone, retired. Carol Ann, welcome back to Veterans Radio.
Thank you very much, and it's an honor to be with the both of you.
So before we get started into our benefits issues, we want to remind folks that they can call into WHAM at 734-822-1600 if they're local. Or if you're out of the general area, call 844-838-1600. We'd be glad to get you in line to answer some of your questions probably have been gnawing at you, and you're wondering how VA handles different issues, whether they be healthcare, or disability benefits or burial benefits, but we've got the experts here to talk about them. But before we get into that, I want to tell you about some local veteran events in the greater Ann Arbor, Detroit area. Let's start with one that is out at Grass Lake, Michigan, the Village of Grass Lake, and a host of sponsors, including the Grass Lake Regional Chamber of Commerce, the Commanders Group of Michigan. The American One Credit Union is sponsoring a World War I centennial event. This is in conjunction with the governor's recognition of the 100th anniversary of World War I. And these kind of events are taking place all over the state, but also all over the country recognizing this. The one out at Grass Lake is taking place Saturday and Sunday, August 4th and 5th. Saturday it starts from noon to 4, and Sunday from noon to 4, there's all the things you'd expect. Music, games, rock climbing. The U.S. Army Rock Climbing Wall will be there. The Michigan State Police will be out there. There'll be period-dressed reenactors. There'll be monuments. There'll be World War I exhibits. There'll be free music. I suspect there might be a beer or two, don't you think, Michael?
I would hope so.
So if you're interested in that, you can certainly go online and search for Grass Lake, a World War I centennial event, or you can call Scott at 517-522-2042 to get some more information. We also have an event coming up for our friends at Michigan Veterans Foundation. Tyrone Chapman there is the head of that and has always done a great job. We've been a great friend to our veterans, focusing primarily on homeless veterans in the Detroit area. The Michigan Veterans Foundation, in collaboration with Shields Pizza of Southfield, is hosting its 7th annual car show in Southfield on Telegraph Road on Sunday, August 12th. This is from 10 to 3 p.m. Again, live music will be featured. There'll be a cash bar, food available, and trophies and prizes for the best cars at the event. Registration is $20 at the gate. This supports Michigan Veterans Foundation, and for more information, you can contact our good friend Tyrone Chapman at 313-831-5500. And again, I suspect if you search online for Michigan Veterans Foundation and the car show for August 12th, you'll get more information that way as well. And then finally, we want to tell you about an event that is being hosted on August 11th. This is called Vet Fest 2018. It's at Mount Brighton, outside Brighton, Michigan. It's being put on in partnership between the Region 9 Veterans Community Action Team, or VCAT, and Mount Brighton. Again, there'll be bands, beer, barbecue, all the good stuff. Members of the Detroit Lions will be present to hand out backpacks filled with school supplies for school-aged children of military members or veterans. Another friend of Veterans Radio and ours in the studio is Josh Parrish, is the regional coordinator for the Michigan Veterans Affairs Agency, and he's involved in making sure that VetFest 2018 goes off without a hitch at Mount Bryden on August 11th. And you can find more about that by, again, searching online for VetFest. It's discussed in a WHMI.com news article, or call Josh Parrish at 906-430-1679. And we're always glad to give support to our local veterans events. They touch so many different veterans in so many different ways. These are just three of the ones that have come in over the last week. I know this time of year has got a lot of veteran events going on because the weather's great and you can do these outdoor events. So if you're interested, please send a Veterans Radio information about your event, whether it be local or far away, and we'll try to get it on air for you to help publicize what you and your organization are doing. And before we go to a break for one of our sponsors, let me tell you again that we're taking phone calls at 844-838-1600 or locally at 734-822-1600. And after the short break, we'll be right back to talk about some of the events in the veterans world with our in-studio guests. So with that, we'll go to one of our sponsors. And welcome back to Veterans Radio. We're in studio with Michael Smith and retired Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone to talk about what's been going on in the veterans world over the last month since they've been here talking on WHAM 1600. And I think probably the place to start is right at the top. You two have gathered here on Veterans Radio. We finally have a new VA secretary, Robert Wilkie. So let's begin with talking a little bit about who the new VA secretary is. Michael, do you want to start?
Well, I'm glad, number one, to see that the Senate confirmed Mr. Wilkie. It's very important for an organization the size and the scope and the importance of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, to have that top position filled. It sets the tone for the entire organization. It gives the organization the vision, the direction, and that it needs to move forward in taking care of our nation's heroes. So we're really happy to see Mr. Wilkie come on board. Looks like he is a veteran of both the U.S. Air Force and Navy, and he's was the Undersecretary for Defense under President Bush. And so he's got some experience in government, and I believe that being a veteran himself and knowing Washington, D.C., and having dealt with presidents and vice presidents and members of Congress, he brings a world of experience to an agency that is desperately in need of leadership right now.
And I just want to piggyback on Michael's comments. The fact that he was in the Department of Defense, I think, is critical because there has not been a seamless transition from DOD to the VA, and people don't understand that. They think we're one big government, and if you think of silos, these are two huge silos that should be talking to one another, and as we will talk later in the program, you know, looking at a new record system that potentially will communicate from cradle to grave, meaning DOD when you enter and until when you leave this earth. So I think it's a good confirmation. He's not new to the VA. He was the acting secretary, and I think he's been addressing multiple issues. So I'm glad we have someone that has a military background and that depth.
Well, I guess I think the fact that he got confirmed is just good news.
Definitely.
We had this Admiral Ronnie Jackson, who was the personal physician of the president, who got nominated, and then he had to withdraw his name because there was all this flack. In my mind, the good news is that Robert Wilkie didn't have any real confirmation consternation. He didn't get unanimously confirmed, but I think that's more presidential politics issue. Right. But so step number one is he knew his way around Washington enough, yes, and he was considered a solid enough candidate that we didn't have hours and hours of hearing on CNN about this guy and his appointment or qualifications or lack. So I think that sends a good message.
It sends a very good message. I attended a roundtable with Senator Debbie Stabenow last Monday, and that meeting she had to leave to go back and fly to Washington, D.C. for his confirmation hearings. And the most important thing she wanted to gather from that group of veterans at the roundtable down in Monroe was, what do you all think about this nominee? And her main concern was whether or not the person who was being nominated had intentions of dismantling the VA healthcare system based on some of the information from the Commission on Care. And mm-hmm. she said she was very happy to find out that Mr. Wilkie is not interested in doing that. He understands the challenges that the VA has, and he understands what the Congress gave them as a charge to do with the Mission Act that the president just signed into law. But what I'm happy to hear is that she was satisfied to cast her vote to nominate him based on the input that she got from our veterans community, and that was very important.
Well, it's good to hear a local politician ask for the input, so that's a very positive piece too. And you know, we recognize everybody who gets nominated, these things, they're all smart guys, right? There's guys and gals, so, you know, they've been around. They're, this guy's a graduate of Wake Forest University, Georgetown University, Loyola University, the Army War College. I mean, you know, they're smart guys, but this is a department with 360,000 employees, a budget that's $198 billion. So, you can be a smart guy, but I think, I mean, I guess my question to both of you is, on something that big, does it matter who the VA secretary is? You've all seen dozens of them at this point in your careers. But does it matter who the VA secretary is to us down in the trenches, down the local levels, Carol Ann?
Well, I think the most important thing, and you're introducing a concept that's very near and dear to me, and I think it's a concern for Michael too, is you need to build a good team. And you need a team, I'm sorry to say, you don't want yes people. You want people that are going to challenge the existing system. You're going to be people, and he needs to listen. As the boss, I want to be surrounded by the best. And I want people to bring me issues and say, you know, this is happening out in the field. And I really do hope he reaches out to the field, because we see what happens out in the field. And just not around D.C., but you know, we could tell him what's happening out here to our veterans.
I agree. You know, we've had some great secretaries. One of my favorite was the Honorable Mr. Shinseki.
Yes.
He, being a retired Army general, a veteran himself of Vietnam, left a portion of his body in Vietnam,
yes,
making those types of sacrifices as a veteran. He really made some major changes, yes, at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs during his tenure. Prior to him, Mr. Principi comes to mind, and he also was one heck of a doggone secretary. So you're right. I agree with you, Caroline. You have to have a person who, with this background, and I think that's where the smart person comes,
yes,
in, is knowing how to get your team together, get a good team, delegate, and then manage those people to bring the change, provide the vision, and get the input back and the feedback from within the organization and outside the organization to help formulate that vision and give it the momentum that it needs to go forward.
You know, Michael, you hit the nail on the head. General Shinseki, when I was in my final position at the Pentagon, he was the chief of staff, and we all know what happened there. He spoke the truth. He implemented what was right. And for us in the VA, he came along. He put the presumptives in. How come we have to go through all of this to prove that you were in a place? And so I really do think He was for me also the number one and the best secretary. He was practical. He listened to people. Whenever you would see him, he would say, "How's it going? What could I do better? What can we change?" And I really do believe he listened. So I hope this new secretary, Secretary Wilkie, will open up and go out to the field.
I agree. What he gave us was the relaxed standard on adjudicating claims for post-traumatic stress disorder. Before Shinseki's introduction of the relaxed standard, we had to have stressor statements that went to the Joint Services Records Research Center, the JSRRC, this abyss that your request would get lost in. And the VA had these follow-up requests that were 3 months, 180 days, 1 year to get an answer out of them for records research to verify that somebody in Vietnam or wherever you were deployed, had the time to sit down and go, yes, we were attacked on a convoy going from Phu Bai to Pleiku, and we lost a guy named Rat. And if they couldn't verify that specific information, a veteran who was deserving of benefits
got
their benefit denied. And so with Shinseki's relaxed standard, which was you've got a diagnosis of PTSD, and a VA physician gives the opinion that it's related to some kind of military activity, You were in fear of your life, fear of terrorist activity, enemy activity, or due to military sexual trauma or some other trauma in service, then you're going to be granted. And that has been the most tremendous benefit to our veterans.
Yep.
Well, there's a good example of where who the VA secretary is really does matter, makes a difference.
Yes.
Can move an item that's stuck in bureaucracy forward that benefits so many people. There are a lot of those we could talk about that we would hope Secretary Wilkie moves along. But let me back up to a question I have about Secretary Wilkie. So the VA is primarily health care benefits, disability benefits, and burial benefits. There's a lot of stuff under all that, but those are the three big ones. Two of those deal with health care issues. Third one's end of health care, I suppose.
Yes.
So the Secretary Wilkie doesn't have a healthcare background. Does that matter, or is that really why you're saying, Carol Ann, there's got to be this team?
Well, exactly, because he needs to count on the undersecretary for benefits, the undersecretary for healthcare to look at those issues. If you're managing, 130-some VA medical centers, what are the issues? They need to get down to the root of what the problems are occurring in the healthcare business. I believe it's the largest in the world. And if you're not understanding those issues, that's a problem. You know, the one other thing that I really think is important, going back to General Shinseki, is he was a hands-on person. He really respected his employees. He respected his military officers and enlisted. And I think that's what this leader needs to do, is really ask the questions. What is going on in the medical centers, the echelon of care, taking care of these veterans, and really hone in on some of the issues on the benefit side, because I think it's a problem.
So let me ask, Michael, when you were talking to these senator and she was asking for your collective opinions on the guy, Did the fact that he didn't have a medical background or a healthcare background come up? Was it discussed? Was there a concern in the room that he didn't bring that to the table?
No, as a matter of fact, no one even brought that as an issue. What we brought to her were our concerns about what's going on with the VA right now, and what we would hope Mr. Wilkie would focus on in terms of continuing to reorganize and modernize and deal with poor performance, poor employees, and bring the VA to a place where they're going to continue to give the kind of quality service that our nation's heroes deserve. When you think about, does his background and his non-medical background matter? I hate to say it, but it's not unlike those within his organization who are rating cases down at a regional office And they literally have no medical backgrounds, yet they're making decisions about whether to grant service connection and then provide an evaluation for how disabling that condition is or those conditions are. And so they have to rely very heavily on the medical side. So I would hope that a person who has a non-medical background would rely on those experts within the organization that can help bring him or her along.
You know, the interesting thing is, as a nurse, you just hit, once again, Michael, the other nail on the head is these individuals that are looking at a chart. Now, the VA has great criteria to follow if somebody would follow it. Put that in electronically, and literally, you know, you would, a number would punch up. You would know the disability rating right out of the chute, but they're not doing that.
Well, good thing we don't have a camera in studio, as the two of them are high-fiving and slapping hands and agreeing at that the VA raters could use a little more medical and healthcare experience. It could damage Michael's reputation if he actually laughs on this on air. But I think that's part of this leadership in this team and this dynamic that we all wish the new secretary well, and hope that Secretary Wilkie goes down in that list of great secretaries when we look back a number of years from now. With a little bit of time left that we have in the first half hour, I want to remind folks that we are taking phone calls for any questions you might have as a veteran or a family member or friend of a veteran. You can call 844-838-1600. Or 734-822-1600. We'd be glad to take your questions on air. And as we move to the end here, I'm going to jump to an issue that was sort of raised pre-show a little bit, and both of you mentioned it briefly in your comments about the importance of what VA is doing. And that's about the movement towards electric health care records, the interchange. And I'm going to want to make sure that in the last few minutes we get a plug-in for our Michigan-based company that's so involved in this area, one of the Michigan companies that are involved. So, Michael, why don't you start that off?
Are you talking about VetraSpec and the announcement they made, which is good for us? So currently there are several ways for claims to be submitted. The VA went to a centralized mail system, and they have a scanning vendor in Janesville, Wisconsin. So you can get a claim there by mailing it to the scanning vendor or by faxing it to the scanning vendor. Or to eliminate the potential for paper to get lost or shredded or not even get uploaded into the Veterans Benefits Management System, our partners at VetraSpec worked very closely with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs to develop a system called Digits to Digits, or D2D, which would allow a user of VetraSpec to package or electronically package a claim and all its support documents and transmit it directly either to a service organization or through Digits to Digits directly to the VA. Mm-hmm. And they made that available to several veteran service organizations who are currently in the regional offices of the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. But they just signed a memorandum of understanding with the National Association of County Veteran Service Officers, and that will now allow county veteran service officers like me who are out here in the field at the county level where the rubber meets the road, and we can now use VetraSpec if we have the state solution of that software, and we can electronically package through Digits to Digits our claims directly to the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs without any concerns about lost paper, lost documents, and now we have just literally reduced at least 2 weeks processing time, if not more.
It's really a use of technology and innovation to speed up the process, which we know so desperately needs to be sped up. The VetraSpec is a Michigan-based business, a couple of great people running it, and it's just exciting to see that this may what they've been working so hard at has gotten recognition with the VA and the Digits to Digits program, and that it's catching national recognition through the county counselors associations, but also at, you know, a lot of state levels and a lot of county levels. It's really a good thing to avoid some of the problems that you've pointed out, including the mailroom issues, which, but electronic healthcare records transfer has been something that DOD and VA have been badly managing for years. I think you've saw that when you were in service, Carol Ann.
Oh, absolutely. And not only badly managed, but could you imagine the billions of dollars that have been spent trying to create this? It's going to be really critical because when you enter the military going on in the future, your record will be captured. And then if you're out on deployment and if you have to have medical treatment or something happens, it will all be documented. So then there will be that seamless interface from when you retire or you leave the service, and it will all be captured, your information in one record, and could be accessed anywhere around the world.
So this sounds so simple. It sounded simple a decade ago, but we haven't gotten there, have we, Michael?
No. And there's a lot of security protocols that have to be overcome, but you know what? Like you said, we've got some smart people working on this, and we hope that they'll work out the kinks and the bugs and get it implemented soon.
All the veterans need it. When we come back after the news, we'll be talking with our experts on the new state veteran homes that are being built in Michigan, and maybe we'll also talk about a favorite topic of medical exams. So call us, 844-838-1600. And we're back on Veterans Radio. We were having a robust discussion during the news. We're glad you stuck with us. You can call in with questions at 734-822-1600 for Michael Smith, who's the director of the Washtenaw County Veterans Affairs Services, or for Brigadier General Carol Ann Fausson, retired, a nurse and veteran advocate in the greater Michigan area. Before we started the break, I wanted to talk about a couple of issues that I mentioned, and one is exams and one is state veteran homes. Let's start with exams, because this happens more than you might think, where a veteran gets notice of an exam, a medical exam we're talking about, at their VA hospital. It might be a comp and pen exam. It might be just an exam in general that he's been trying to get into or she's been trying to get into. And they miss the exam, not with malice, to use a lawyer's term, but or intent to miss it. But hey, life happens. They're on vacation. An emergency comes up. Have you experienced this, Michael? We'll start with you. Have your clients experienced this? And what do you tell them to do?
Well, first of all, we have to think about two organizations who should be able to talk to each other, such as the Veterans Benefits Administration and the Veterans Health Administration. I have literally seen exam requests go to a VA hospital, and then the Veterans Services Representative on the VBA side of the house says, "We note that you have a different address for the veteran in your healthcare system," but they cannot change it. Even though the VBA may have the updated address that came in with the application for disability compensation or pension, they are not allowed to go into the hospital systems, because they're two separate systems, and change that veteran's address. Similarly, if the veteran's address that goes to the VBA side is different from what the hospital has, the hospital is not allowed to change that veteran's address unless they get the input from the veteran. So that's the first thing we have to think about missed exams. Sometimes veterans are not receiving their notifications because the address that the hospital has is not where the veteran's currently living. Sometimes I'll say to my veterans, "Did you update your address?" And they go, "Well, yeah, I told the hospital." I'm like, "Well, you have to tell the VBA side as well." Or if they say, "Well, I told the VBA side," I said, "Did you tell the hospital?" And they'll say, "No." And I'll get them down there right away to make sure that their addresses are up to date.
Another good reason to have one medical record.
Exactly. Now, if they do miss the exam, There are several things that we do. I'll go into the Veterans Benefits Management System to see if the exam has gone back to the VBA side as a no-show. If they are, I immediately submit a request on behalf of the veteran asking that the VA would please reschedule the compensation and pension examination. And basically, we put a statement in there that says that I am ready, willing, and able now to make it to that examination. Please notify me, and here's all my updated address information. So we just merely ask kindly if the VA would reschedule them.
Well, I know you've had a recent instance of this, Carol Ann. Why don't you explain to our audience sort of what happened and what the outcome was.
Well, I want to piggyback what Michael was saying about the address. Another thing that could happen, the VA could ask a contractor to do it locally in the area, and you hope that it is local. So maybe sometimes the veteran finds out, you get a phone call from the contractor, and you're like, what? I'm in Michigan, but you're telling me you're in Indiana? So sometimes the communication needs to occur with the contractor, that they are truly getting the closest location for this veteran. Along the issues that are occurring, the address, the contractor could have it in another state, so the location. But the other thing that should be happening is a phone call. And I am hearing more and more that the veteran is not receiving a phone call from either the contractor or the VA, that this is being scheduled. So there's a couple issues, but let me share this with you. The veteran knew he was going to be scheduled for a hearing test, and he waited for it and waiting for it, was told it's coming, all right? And so the problem is he had an event scheduled on a weekend. They left on a Thursday night. The package came on Friday. When he returned, he found out he missed the appointment from a week ago. And so how do you even go to an appointment if when your package, this going back, and I promised I wouldn't harbor on it, the mail system, if you get notified about an appointment that was last week? And so there are several issues that are occurring, but once again, I'm going to say this. Don't give up hope. You might get that denial letter, but we'll go back in, whether it's through county counselor, your VSO, or Legal Help for Veterans, and we will get this sorted out that you never received the notification timely.
So you'd both agree that as soon as the veteran knows that they either have missed it or will miss it, they should take some action.
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yes. And correct it as promptly as possible.
Yes.
And try to keep their anger level down. It's just a scheduling issue.
Right.
It's a scheduling issue. And in the fact that if the veteran calls us, you get that appointment and it's 3 hours away and it doesn't make any sense why you're going to another state or the other side of the state, contact your rep immediately. We could get that rescheduled. That doesn't go in as a no-show. It doesn't go against you as a ding. And so we kind of put everything on suspension so that denial letter isn't prompted.
Yes, yeah, so the three contractors that the VA uses here in Michigan are QTC, IHL, and VES, which is Veterans Evaluation Services. And so, yes, these vendors are typically going to be closer to where the veterans live, yet they're more accommodating in some instances than even the VA hospital in the compensation and pension examination section over here on Packard, in that I've seen veterans who were notified of five separate dates for five separate exams.
Yes.
And the veterans, you know, from our prompting, called QTC or IHL or VES and said, hey, is it possible that I can have all this done on one day? And yes, they rescheduled the veterans and got every single one of their exams on the same day to cut down on travel, make it more convenient for the veteran. And so I particularly like all three of the vendors. They've always been accommodating to our veterans.
And that's good news to pass along to our veterans, that you do have the possibility to reschedule those into a common exam date. And don't feel that if you've been given totally unworkable exam dates from your viewpoint, either by distance, timing, vacation schedules, other things. You've already got a private doctor exam going on at that same time, that it's hopeless, that you should just get mad and slam the phone down and throw all the stuff into the garbage can, but to contact somebody and work your way through that, because they will be accommodating in most instances.
You know, Michael just said something, and I've seen this happen more than I like. One example is the veteran could not drive himself, so he had to get a family member. And in order, because of his multiple sclerosis and his declining health, they had to get an ambulette. They put him in the ambulette. The sister went with him. And when they got to the place where he was going to be examined, the physician was sick that day, but nobody notified him. So we then immediately, when we got word, we called back, and they were very apologetic. So I think, once again, a good relationship, keeping your cool, is really important. They arranged something very quickly and made it very convenient for this veteran and their family to get the exam completed. So communication really needs to go back and forth, whether it's with the VA, the schedulers, the contractors, the veteran and their family. It's not easy, but hopefully we're making some things better by telling you, veterans, and your family, how to address this CMP exam issue.
Well, and you said another thing that's very important in terms of communication. As county veteran service officers, as field service officers, department service officers, any of us who are functioning in roles as advocates, we should be educating all of our claimants that, look, here is the most important next part of this claim. Once I submit it, the VA is going to start doing all of their development, one of which is getting records, service treatment records, service personnel records, and then, yes, setting up examinations to get the very information that they're going to need to determine, number one, that the medical condition is related to military service, and then number two, how disabling it is, so that they can evaluate you and assign a disability percentage. So I monitor VBMS regularly for all of my clients, and I typically try to give them a heads up. I'll let them know, I saw the exam request go in today. Within the next week or so, either the VA hospital or one of their contractors should be contacting you to schedule you or set you up for your exam. So, you know, and I may not be able to do that in every instance, but at least at the visits where we're completing applications for benefits, I let them know you're going to be set up for an exam, and the exam is very, very important. And yes, if they miss it, they'll get a denial, because right in that denial, the VA will say, you were scheduled for an exam on this date and you didn't show up. Information necessary to rate you was, and it was very important information, would have been contained in those exam results, and without them, we're not able to rate you. So it's a very easy fix. Most veterans focus on the fact that they were denied. And they don't focus on the fact that it can be easily fixed.
Well, you know, once again, education is very important, because if you tell our veterans, and I know you do and we do, you should hear from the VA in a week to schedule this. Our veterans, we tell them, call back if you don't hear anything. And then that puts it in our ballpark again to go out and help them.
So a couple of quick things. You both talked about educating your veterans. One of the things that we recently had the chance to do on Veterans Radio is talk to folks from the RAND Corporation. And they had been commissioned to do a study about, were private doctors or private health care providers ready to deal with veterans? I don't want to get into it too deep, because that's probably a whole show by itself. But interestingly, by the own admission of the healthcare, and this is out in New York State, not city, the whole state, New York State's medical providers at something like only about 25% thought that they were ready, competent, knowledgeable about veteran healthcare issues. And to me, what that really says is those talking to veterans, being their advocates, educating them, should be telling them, as when you talk to your private physician, tell them this, that, or the other thing about your military service or your service-connected disabilities or your thoughts on that, because don't assume that that medical provider has any knowledge about what a burn pit is or what the noise level is of a howitzer. Am I right? I mean, is that something we ought to be communicating to our veterans that they've got to talk to their private physicians about?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you the honest truth. When you talk about whether the secretary had a medical background or who within the VA does or doesn't have a medical background, yes, we're talking about medical conditions, and our biggest advocate in helping a veteran secure benefits is a good, competent physician. And not everybody goes to the VA hospitals to get their treatment. And so I've got some civilian doctors who will give their veterans the world relative to assessing their medical conditions, giving opinions about if it is or is not related to military service, and then why it's related to military service, give good reasons and bases. We provide them letters, and we curry and nurture relationships with good doctors, not only as advocates, but we instruct or advise and educate our veterans to have those candid conversations with their doctors so that they can be that one person or two or three people in their corner that's going to help them secure the benefits they deserve.
Well, you know, when these exams are going on, I think it's really important to have a family member with you, particularly in some of these cases when you sit down and they'll say, for a male, how are you doing? Well, I'm doing good today. And the wife will say, what do you mean you're doing good? And I, you know, hey, audience, these two guys are laughing at me, but I am telling the truth. You've got to tell it like it is, and you got to have a good relationship to say, you know, he's walking around at night, he's hallucinating, he's going through all of these issues. That's a part of the PTSD. It's a part of the dramatic brain injury. It's a part of the challenges of war that aren't being communicated. So I think it's really important to have that first level of evidence with you.
I'll tell you, I won't mention his name, but there's a doctor out there who has been treating one of my veterans who was a victim of military sexual trauma. He diagnosed her with PTSD, board-certified psychiatrist, been providing direct treatment to her for over 3 years. She then entered, and I got her linked up with the vet center because we're a community access point, a CAP. We bring a representative, a readjustment counselor out from the Dearborn Vet Center to our office at Washtenaw County Department of Veteran Affairs the second and fourth Wednesdays of each month. Now, she goes down for her CNP exam in Detroit, and the doctor down there diagnosed her with an unspecified stressor and trauma-related disorder and bipolar disorder, and then basically said she didn't believe it was related to the military sexual trauma. I gave that CNP exam to her treating psychiatrist, who wrote me a 3-page treatise about not only does she meet all the criteria in DSM-5, but he went back to her DSM-4 diagnosis and said why she met 6 out of 7 for criterion C under DSM-4 and why she met both criterion in C for DSM-5, and literally tore that CNP examiner disability benefits questionnaire apart. And then on the way out the door, I said, oh, and by the way, I used to do these examinations for the VA for a period of 5 years. And okay, let me remind you, I am a board certified psychiatrist. I think I know how to diagnose PTSD. And that claim was reopened with that new and material evidence. She just had LHI last week for her examination, and the first thing that examiner asked her was, why aren't you already service connected?
Yep.
So that's the reason why having a good doc.
And that's really the key, right? Yeah, it is having a good private doctor. Hopefully you can afford one. You got the insurance policy or Medicare, Medicaid, whatever it is. You got a good doctor, but you do have to talk to them.
And have a conversation with them.
About the military. Don't walk in assuming they know or they understand if you are using kind of cryptic code about what happened. It may not mean anything to them.
But just think about what Michael said, Jim. she went to the VA physician first.
That's a different problem. Okay. Her best advocate was the private doctor.
I agree with you, but thank God there was somebody like a Michael Smith who said we need a second opinion or a third opinion, and that is costly. And what happens to the amount of money and the time that it took for the VA individual? We're talking about CMP exams and the value of that. That's costly. If you're having to go out and double dip, if I will say, to get the truth on paper.
Right. Well, speaking of things that are costly and keeping an eye on the clock, we may not get to everything we promote here, but I did want to talk about a recent VA IG report that came out about the VA spending about $10 million in unwarranted medical exams for military veterans. Now, when I first saw this headline, it was going to tick me off, I figured, because it was about, well, we shouldn't treat them for this or that or examine them for this, that. But as I got into it, I understood that the IG was really talking about re-exams. And if you work with veterans' disability benefits long enough, you know one of the most anxious things for a veteran who finally gets his award, and they're rarely permanent awards. We won't get into what it takes to be that because we don't have the time. But what really makes them anxious and nervous is they're going to reduce me on a reexamination. So let's start with talking about what the idea is behind a reexamination, which isn't a bad idea, but how it actually works out in practice, and then this recent IG report. Carolyn, what's the purpose of the reexam?
Well, I've given you, let's say, PTSD. I've given you a award of 70%, and either somebody indicates on your records you're doing great. You're
kept
out
going
there.
In and saying, I'm fine, right, Michael?
Yes. but there is some inkling, because you're not permanent and total, and there's this rule out there that you have to be reexamined. They'll put you into the scheduler, and every so often you've got to be reexamined. I think that's a huge waste, because it's you know, do you catch somebody that I made the wrong mistake? These men and women have served our country. Take a look at them. This one that you had the initial ruling of 70%, he probably or she probably should have been at 100%. So I don't understand all of that. Is there wastage? I don't know if Michael runs into this. I do. Sometimes an exam is accomplished. And I think all of our veterans out there know that the exam is theoretically good for 2 years. You could make a ruling on that. Well, what happens if nobody looks at your exam beyond the 2 years? Guess what? You have to go back and be rescheduled for an exam, and it could have been very favorable. We've seen those before. So do I believe this report? Yes, I'm sorry to say I do believe it. There's some wastage out there.
Well, the unfortunate thing is that the VA regulations for certain disability ratings require that the VA, especially like with mental health disorders, under the quote-unquote likelihood that you're going to get better, unquote. So because they don't want you getting more than you should, God forbid, if you're 70% disabled today, but then you go to treatment and in the VA hospital or whoever does their job and 2 years later, they've got you better. We don't want you getting 70% disability compensation. You should more appropriately get 30 or 50. And that's the purpose behind those. So PTSD evaluations are very rarely permanent. The law requires on an initial assessment, I believe they're required to examine them within two to three years.
Right.
Same with cancers. Cancers require a temporary assignment of 100%, and then the VA is required under their rules within 6 months to a year to re-examine you to determine whether or not the cancer is gone, if it's gotten better, if it's worse. They don't do that typically with orthopedic conditions as much. They don't re-examine you for orthopedic conditions, but there are some conditions in their regulations that require them to re-examine you under the premise that through treatment, you're going to get better.
So the theory is good. So that's why the report, in my mind, as an old engineer, was important, because theory is one thing. What's it really work out in practice? And part of the VBA policy is to determine whether a follow-up exam or reexamination is needed before scheduling. So you're going to roll up. It's time to, the policy says we're supposed to reexamine you. But there's another provision that says, but somebody's got to make a medical review of you before just scheduling it. And the IG found that 78%, let's call it 80% of the re-exams weren't looked at ahead of time to say, does it make any sense to schedule this person?
That's correct.
That's the sort of thing that, again, you know, your veterans are worried about, I'm randomly being grabbed and nobody's understood. The last time I was in there, I was worse. And then this report came out and found that 37% of the overall reviews, if I have the numbers right here, shouldn't have been done, just flat out shouldn't have been done.
Well, we're seeing right now that, and Michael, you brought up a good area, cancers. Let's say you removed a tumor and then, you haven't even gone back for an exam. You were at 100% because they removed the tumor. But, oh yes, you're going to have radiation and chemo. Guess what? You're on the slate for a reduction. They're going to take you back to either 30% because you're going through the radiation and the chemo. And I'm like, what? How could you be reducing this veteran? He needs to go through a course, and we hear, I mean, out there, it takes 5 years to be declared cancer-free, and within the first 6 months, they're reducing our veterans with no exams.
So that is a problem, and we could definitely fight that because the examination is required. But you're right, cancers come with two ratings, 100% or zero. Once the cancer resolves, your temporary 100% goes to zero, and then they rate you on whatever residual disability the treatment of that cancer creates. That's and cost. Prostate cancer is one of the best ones. It's a good example. Yeah. You're going to get rated on avoiding dysfunction or urinary frequency. And typically those rate out because of how badly the treatment affects certain areas of the body for men.
Right.
That's going to come out to be maybe 30 to 60% as a residual. So yeah, you're not going to go all the way back to zero per se, but now you're going to be zero for the cancer, but you're going to be 30 or 60% for that voiding, dysfunction or urinary infrequency. But you're right. That's probably one of the best areas for you all and all of us who do appeals work.
Yes.
Is when the VA misses one of their required administrative hoops that have to be jumped. If an exam for cancer is required in 6 months to a year and they're making those reductions without the exam, then they're wrong.
And the other thing I guess I wanted to get across out of this report for our listeners who maybe are a little worried about being reexamined is that when it all got done and said, the IG said the VA only reduced ratings 19% of the time. So don't get yourself all worked up about this because the odds are in your favor that you're not going to get reduced on that old 80-20 rule, which a lot of life hinges on. And I guess that would be your advice, right? If a client veteran gets notified of reexamination, they should be in touch with you. They should be talking to you.
Absolutely.
Immediately.
And at that point, both of you can, respective groups can take a few actions to help them along and certainly advise them how to go into the re-exam.
Yes.
And if there's a proposal to reduce, we've got a 60-day due process period by which we can get together with those great doctors that we have in our corner to say to the VA why we disagree with that proposal.
I want to thank Brigadier General Carol Ann Fossone, retired with Legal Help for Veterans, for joining us in studio with Michael Smith, the director of the Washtenaw County Veteran Affairs Group. Dale's been off for all of the month of July, so I know he's roaring to get back here back in the chair and take command over here in August. And until next time, you are dismissed.